You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to tonight's live broadcast of TPC. 1 week until Christmas. As a matter of fact, next week at this time, it will be Christmas Eve, and we will be right here with Pastor Brett McAtee to present to you the biblical accounting of the Christmas story. But first, tonight's show. Keith and I have been preparing for this show about an hour in advance of the broadcast tonight. And it went from a show that I was thinking, you know, it's the week before Christmas. Maybe it's going to be a show with a little bit of filler. You know, I don't want to mail it in. But then manna from heaven came down. Manna from heaven, to the extent that I believe that not only will we have a good show tonight, I think that this could be one of the most memorable shows of the year because of a couple of headlines, and we'll be tackling them in each of the first and second hours tonight. Welcome to the broadcast, Saturday evening, December the 17th, James Edwards, Keith Alexander. The first story, we're going to start the show like we've done the last couple of weeks. It's another Kanye West headline, but he's only serving the platter tonight. We're going to be the ones dishing it out, I guess you could say, in a manner of speaking. He made headlines again this week after claiming that Rosa Parks was a plant. Kanye West claiming Rosa Parks was a plant made headlines. And, well, Keith, take it from there, for starters.
Well, again, Kanye hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what happened. Basically, the entire civil rights movement was a theatrical production. We've said this many times on this show. We may as well just, you know, hit the nail on the head and drive it straight, as we say, because, you know, the thing that really holds us back as a movement is this sanctimonious, almost sacred aspect that they have shrouded the civil rights movement with. The civil rights movement was righteous and holy, and they always retreat to this. That's their redoubt. Whenever people start to get skeptical about the latest radical egalitarian movement of the left, like transgenderism or climate change or homosexual marriage or, you know, whatever, you know, the sexual revolution, the drug culture, feminism, whatever, what do they always do? They always, when they start losing ground, they retreat to the civil rights movement, and they say, but you have to admit the civil rights movement was totally justified. It was righteous and holy, and we were the righteous and holy ones. We're still the righteous and holy
ones. Well, we're going to dive into this hour in a way that we haven't done before. Now, certainly you've heard us talk about the fact that Rosa Parks was a plant. We've been saying it a long time before Kanye West. She was the one who stuck the landing. They had tried this before, this stage
stunt. They really didn't try it. What happened was this, James. They actually had an episode like this where a black girl complained about having to go to the back of the bus, but it was a 15-year-old girl named Claudette Colvin.
She wasn't made for prime time like Rosa was.
She was morbidly obese. She was 15 years old, an unwed mother, and she was as profane and ribald as you could possibly imagine. They didn't want that to be the face of the movement, so they recast it, did it as a theatrical production starring Rosa Parks.
And Rosa Parks was a trained agent at the Highlander Folk School. There are photos of her. That is an incontrovertible fact. She was a Marxist agitator. Now, since she's back in the news, though, Keith, of course, that makes us remember our interview with Drew Lackey, the former, he was an officer at the time in the Montgomery Police Department. He rose up the ranks to become the chief of police in Montgomery, Alabama, that epicenter of the so-called civil rights movement. And of course, in addition to our interview with Drew Lackey, which you've heard, and which actually we even packaged as a fundraising incentive a couple of years ago, we put it on the CD, sent it out. So you've heard that one, and you've heard us talk about it.
I really think it's one of our best moments, because if it were not for the political cesspool, and James in particular, all of that would be lost to history. We were the only people that interviewed him.
Let me tell you, I posted a picture of Drew Lackey, and I actually, you can go look at it at Twitter, at James Edwards TPC. I posted a picture of Officer Lackey, the officer who booked Rosa Parks on the night of her arrest.
Took her fingerprints.
And in that iconic picture, I posted that and of us together at a conference in the mid-2000s. We were both speakers of that particular conference. It was a Council of Conservative Citizens conference. And a picture of the cover of his book. Now, the book is good. It is mainly an apologetic for the law enforcement agencies in Alabama at the time. He was much more on point, I thought, in the interview with TPC when he made mention of the fact that, hey, he also booked Martin Luther King, by the way. So he had up close and personal dealings with these people. And he made mention of the fact that it was always crime and violence when they came to town. And as you said, Keith, that's when the cameras would start rolling, when the police would have to respond to the provocations of the so-called civil rights demonstrators. Now, nothing being taught about the so-called civil rights era is in accord with the facts. And I posted this picture of Drew Lackey and I. He passed away at the age of 90 a couple of years ago, and his book, and it really got a lot of engagements. I think about 1,000 likes and several hundred retweets, which is a pretty good level of engagement. And one of the Twitter commenters wrote, "Conservatives are really pathetic because conservatives were attacking Kanye West for saying Rosa Parks was a plant." And he writes that they internalized, these so-called conservatives, all the weaponized mythology from Rosa Parks to MLK to Lincoln in hopes of getting a good boy pat on the back from individuals who never tire of destroying everything conservatives hold dear. And
well,
I thought that was a good point, too.
Well, James, you know, you and other people get on me occasionally for identifying as a conservative, but I'm a paleo conservative. You are too. And these new normie cons, as we call them, that want to claim the civil rights movement and Martin Luther King and colorblindness as their stance, that, you know, Martin Luther King was a Republican and Democrats were the real racists, all this type of stuff. Those people are hopeless. They are lost balls in high weed. Those people have bought into the lie that the civil rights movement was some righteous and holy, totally justified movement. It was just the first of a series of radical, egalitarian, leftist movements intended to destroy America as we know it. The, you know, the white nation that was founded here by George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, people like that. It was an anti-white movement. And these people that don't recognize that, they're beyond hope.
And see, that's the thing about this program. So, yes, we brought to you Officer Lackey, who was an eyewitness to all of this history. And he wrote the book, Another View of the Civil Rights Movement. Good book. I thought an even better interview. And basically in the interview, he echoes everything we've ever said about it. But that's not what's going to make this hour interesting and a standout. I'm going to tell you about another book and another author that we interviewed. Don't tell them who it is, that we interviewed on this show. And we're going to revisit that interview in depth with Keith's reaction and comments.
And it's not somebody that you hear on anyone else's show.
We'll be right back.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Malakalikimaka is the thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day. That's the island greeting that we send you from the land where palm trees sway. Here we know that Christmas will be green and bright. The sun will shine by day and all the stars at night. Melukalikimaka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas to you. Thank you, girl.
For anybody that may be listening to us in the tropics tonight, that one's for you. Welcome back to the show, James Edwards, Keith Alexander. So we were talking about the fact this headline-generating comment of Kanye West, Rosa Parks was a plant, caused us to remember our interview with the officer who booked her, the book that he wrote and the interview that he gave on this program. And then I started to think, it's very difficult to find historical content from the pro-South side of the so-called civil rights movement. And then I remembered another book that was sent to me, along with a gracious inscription. And the title of the book is George Wallace, The Man You Never Knew, by the man who knew him best. And it was a book written by George Wallace Jr., the governor's son. And he wrote a very gracious inscription in the book to my good friend James Edwards, with my hope that this book will allow you a greater understanding of my father and his love for Alabama and the country. Thank you for your friendship. With warmest regards, George C. Wallace Jr. We actually interviewed George Wallace Jr. on this show.
I remember.
Some years ago, and we have not talked about that a lot. That was one that we haven't really replayed or revisited until now, so that's what we're going to do.
Well, basically, we have, you know, it's occurred to us that we have a unique perspective on this issue. We talked about this early on, and furthermore, I lived through this era. There aren't a lot of people that did, and I can tell you the whole thing was a trumped-up theatrical production.
All right.
And we'll give you all sorts of details about that. But see, there are so many people nowadays that want to claim that we were really the civil rights movement. We conservatives were. The Republicans were. Etc. ad nauseum. But they don't realize that was the beginning of the end for white America. And we need to understand that, because white America is what people want. That's why people are coming from the third world to America. They don't want to live in Harlem. They don't want to live in Orange Mound. They want to live in Nob Hill, or they want to live in the Upper West Side or something like this. That's what America has to offer.
All right, Keith, here's what we're going to do. And the only way we can do it is if we go quick. I'm going to play some selected clips. I went back and listened to the interview with George Wallace Jr. earlier today and made some selective cuts that we're going to be playing for you. And then we're going to get Keith's reaction to it, but we got to go quick if we're going to do that. And so let's go to this first clip right now. Here we go.
Here's the question is, what was it like growing up as the son of one of the most iconic governors in American history?
Well, it was very interesting, and he was a fascinating man in so many ways, but his career was one that took off immediately, really even beyond the borders of Alabama, and he became a national figure very quickly, and so it was very interesting. Our lives went from the tranquility and peaceful existence of rural Barber County in southeast Alabama to one of being in the governor's mansion and family of a very controversial a man. So it was very different. I frankly wrote the book. I always have enjoyed writing, and I started writing early in the mornings a few years ago. And the more I wrote about my father and events and so on, the more I realized there was a man in my father many people never knew. In so many ways, I know he's defined early on relative to the issue of segregation, which was part of his journey. But I tried to write and chronicle his entire journey, which I've done professionally, politically, and personally. And once I had done that, I realized that I've shed some light on a man many people never knew. But the lives we lived were very interesting because he rose to the highest levels as a candidate and was winning in 1972 as a conservative Democrat when he was shot and taken out of the race. And, you know, I am thinking about his journey politically. He has been called by many prominent writers and editorial columnists, George Will, Dave Broder, Paul Greenberg, and Dan Carter and others, as the grandfather of the modern conservative movement.
Okay, here's what we're going to be doing for the rest of this hour, and I think this is going to be riveting. I hope it is. I hope you like this. This is we're revisiting my interview from 10 years ago, maybe, you know, and I got this letter in today, this week, Keith, a handwritten note from Michelle, who writes, just discovered your program about 6 weeks ago, and I love it. I love Harry Cooper and Shark Hunters as well. Don't forget our Christmas fundraising drive, everybody. And Merry Christmas. That's from Michelle in North Carolina. So for the benefit of people who are new listeners, and this is one, just been listening for about 6 weeks, this is an interview from 10 years ago. So there's a good chance that a lot of people tune in tonight haven't heard this. So we're going to be replaying for the rest of this hour quick clips. That's actually the longest one we'll play. Quick clips and then getting quick reaction from Keith. But Keith, I want you to react to what you heard from George Wallace Jr. right there, the son of Alabama Governor George Wallace, and another Alabama governor. His mother, if you remember, was also an Alabama governor, Lurleen Wallace. The idea that what Wallace stood for is what conservatism is all about.
Absolutely. We need to stop apologizing for segregation. And if you really want to taste the irony of all this, segregation is now what black leaders are calling for. They're calling for segregated dormitories. They are asking for segregated graduations. They want segregated class offerings and things like this. Everything that they and see, that's because segregation, quite frankly, is a natural, normal instinct among the tribes of humanity. You know, if you don't have a sense of solidarity with your own kind, quite frankly, most people, and in my experience, most black people will think that there's something wrong with you. That's, you know, what you know, people like to live together. Look, when you have people coming here from overseas, what do? Let's say you have people coming from Syria or you have people coming from Morocco. What they do is they get a Moroccan neighborhood. They have parties for one another. They basically try to create a little Morocco over here in America under more prosperous circumstances. So stop apologizing for segregation. That is a natural, normal human instinct.
This book, as I said, difficult to find historical content from a pro-South side in that era. We have Drew Lackey's book, Another View of the Civil Rights Movement. We've interviewed him. This is George Wallace Jr.'s book, Governor George Wallace, the man you never knew from the man who knew him best. And it's full of suppressed information and photos. I was revisiting the book and the interview today. There's so many incredible pictures in this book, like the letter Charles Lindbergh sent to Governor Wallace, showing how much Charles Lindbergh respected and admired and supported George Wallace. And how about this? I'm just going to play this very quickly and get your reaction, Keith. Well, I say I am. I got to remember to turn on the... All right, here it comes. Here it comes. We're going to get better at this. Okay, here we go.
A PowerPoint presentation of some of the photographs. We have 333 photographs in the book, James, and I could have had 1,000. So,
right.
And where do you stop? But interesting pictures of my dad and Elvis. Elvis was a great fan and used to call my father all the time. Elvis just loved him. And So many historical photographs that are fascinating. But
so, you know, Keith, we were talking a couple of months ago about the new Elvis movie. And in the new Elvis movie, they portray Elvis as this staunch integrationist, siding totally with the black side of the civil rights movement. What did you just hear there? What's the actual history? Well, it wasn't just that cut and dry, was it?
Well, he was a supporter of George Wallace, who was supposed to be the incarnation of the devil himself, according to the national news media. Basically, what he's saying is that these people nowadays that want to claim that everybody that lived through that era was either a closeted left-winger or they were the devil incarnate, they're just missing reality.
I want to play.
We need to talk about the reality of what things were back then.
If you're interested to hear more about Elvis and George Wallace, listen to this.
It's very interesting about Elvis. Elvis used to call him all the time. He was a big fan of my dad's. He told him one time that he had a Wallace for President sign on the front lawn of Graceland in 68. But after my father was injured in 72, Elvis would call quite often and offer him his various vacation spots around the world. And he said, George, I'll come pick you up on my jet and we'll just go wherever you want to go. My dad never did the declined and was graceful and thanked him. But Elvis was a big fan. And I,
real history. So that wasn't in the movie. Why didn't that make the movie, Keith?
Because we got to take a break. It didn't fit the narrative.
A brand new movie out about Elvis. He's a staunch integrationist. He hates the South. He hates the old South. But, he was supporting Wallace in the 60s with a sign in Graceland. We'll be right back.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA News, I'm Dave Collins. Travel delays are worsening this weekend before Christmas. FlightAware reports 3,800 delays and over 180 cancellations here in the country. The airport seeing the most delays, no surprise, Chicago's O'Hare International Airport. In an effort to try and prevent the spread of COVID-19 over the winter months, the Biden administration's Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra says they're offering more free at-home COVID tests and establishing pop-up mobile vaccination sites, including providing support for health centers and nursing homes across the country. Florida's struggling with below quantities of their orange crop. Rich Johnson explains.
The combination of extreme weather and a disease attacking citrus fruit could drive down Florida's orange crop to its lowest level since before World War II. The forecast now is for Florida to produce 20 million boxes of oranges this year. That's about 51% below last year's crop.
The cup of Joe may not be available to your favorite coffee joint this weekend.
Looks like you're going to have to get caffeinated somewhere else. Workers at about 100 Starbucks across the U.S. going on strike this weekend. Starbucks Workers United says the strike is to protest unfair labor practices, including closing stores that voted to join the union. It also claims that the company has refused to bargain for an initial union contract. This is the second cross-country strike by the union.
That's Corey Myers reporting. A Motown legend will appear tonight at the Microsoft Theater at LA Live. Stevie Wonder's House Full of Toys benefit concert takes place starting around 8 o'clock at the downtown Los Angeles venue. Attendees are encouraged to bring a new toy. The staff members will collect them and distribute those to families. This is USA News.
So right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for healthcare, and here's why. Not only is it open enrollment for a lot of people, it's also a time you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. And it's true, the typical family switching to MediShare saves $500 or more a month, which is obviously huge for a lot of people, but what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate compared to health insurance. Double. There are 400,000 members, they've shared over $4 billion in medical bills, and it really is a great community too. People encourage and pray for each other. And here's the thing. If you join MediShare Complete right now, they'll waive your new member fees and you'll save an additional 10% off all of 2023. That's right. No fee to join. 10% off every month of next year. But it's a very limited time offer. You have to sign up before December 31st. Great savings. Great health care. Find out more. Call now. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing, hallelujah.
Merry Christmas, everybody. I want to be sure to say that as we continue tonight's program. James Edwards, Keith Alexander, we're revisiting an interview in light of Kanye West's comments this week that Rosa Parks was a plant with George Wallace Jr. And, of course, his father, Governor George Wallace, was most known for his stand on segregation, the stand in the schoolhouse door. Let's go straight to that issue now.
As my dad related to me over time, he said, son, we were taught that it was in the best interest of both races to be separate. Now, as archaic and antiquated and prehistoric as that sounds today, the point I make to you is that the people of the South did not have hate in their hearts.
That's right.
Now, there are exceptions to that, Jane, but generally, when you suggest that they do, as some on elite left would, that's an agenda there. The people of the South do not feel that way and never did. Now,
all right, Keith, a comment on that, and I mean a quick
well,
one.
That's right. It's segregation is used to demonize Southerners. Basically, it was a common-sense compromise for allowing people of different races to live together, and it's a compromise that you see lived out every day in America today. You see groups, for example, the most segregated group in America are Jewish. They have their own neighborhoods. We have one in Memphis called Hebrew Heights. They give an excuse for, well, we're supposed to be in walking distance of our temple or whatnot. But nonetheless, they all live together in their own neighborhoods. But on the other hand, when white Gentiles try to do that, it's some great evil.
A comment on Twitter said, I posted a picture of the Alabama State Troopers on one side and then the so-called civil rights protesters on the others. And I said, the guys on the right were the good guys. Twitter commenter wrote, blacks and whites both prioritize their interests. It's understandable that blacks wanted equality, but doesn't today's urban public transportation, both violent and dilapidation, support why whites wanted separation? Integration versus safety and standard of living will always cause tension. And that is, I mean, he hit it spot on. I gave a speech in Selma earlier this summer. I stood on the Edmund Pettus Bridge where the so-called Bloody Sunday event occurred. And could anyone honestly say that Selma is a better, safer, cleaner, and more efficiently run city now than it was in the 1950s? And if it's not, why is that so? The bottom line to me, Bull Connor was right, and George Wallace was right, and we continue to talk about this issue with his son, George Wallace Jr., 10 years ago on this program.
And it's not just another Selma issue, that's like that.
That we briefly touched on this morning when you and I were talking together on the phone.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to say, and feel free to disagree with me if you'd like, but in many ways, I've found, personally, your father's stand in the 60s to be commendable, and this is why. This was a states' rights issue, and as a populist, I feel as though, from an outsider looking in, he was advocating on behalf of the will of the people. The federal government simply didn't have the authority to do what they did in the South at that time, and it can be argued whether or not ultimately their actions were right or wrong, but I believe they overstepped their constitutional bounds. And I shared with you in our talk this morning that I was a guest on CNN a few years back for a full hour, which is very rare, to discuss the topic of self-segregation, and they had me on as part of a panel to discuss this issue, and I was there to present the merits of the case. I guess they couldn't find anybody else to do it. But frankly, even in 2012, this day and age in which we live, blacks, whites, Hispanics, etc., we all still self-segregate to a large degree, and I find it to be quite natural that folks choose to associate with others who share a common ancestry, culture, and religion. It doesn't mean that it's wrong if you choose to associate with others who are different, not at all, but it's a choice that a free people should have. It's not racism, an obtuse hatred of people who are different from you for no reason whatsoever. It's not racism to have a preference. It doesn't mean you hate them. I don't hate anyone, and I know you don't either. It's a taboo subject. We always have to walk a tightrope when discussing it. And I know your father was conflicted by the matter before, during, and after his time in office. But that's my personal take on it. Am I way off base here?
Well, the inextricable link between states' rights and the sovereignty of the states, the 10th Amendment, if you will, the Reserve Clause, was inextricably linked with the issue at the time, which was segregation. And he felt, and the people of Alabama most felt, that we should determine our own timetable relative to that. But he was raising constitutional questions at the University of Alabama as to who should run that institution, the federal government or the state of Alabama.
Keith?
The state of Alabama was financing it, so of course they should be running it. You know, the idea that somehow it's segregation is unholy or racism. Racism is not a sin. You need to tell your pastor that the next time he gives you a sermon on racism. Racism was an invented concept in the mid-30s by a German-Jewish homosexual pedophile named Magnus Hirschfeld, who wrote a book called Racism, and he was trying to coin a new term with which to bludgeon conservatives and the right wing in Germany. So don't buy into this idea. You know, you can look through the Bible all you want, and you won't find the word racism in it once.
Okay. Now, how far could Governor George Wallace have gotten as candidate for president? George Wallace running on the issue of states' rights and, yes, segregation? I asked his son that question.
Battle that was raging way back then, James, is the same battle that rages today. And he was, in many ways, prophetic about what he was saying way back then. But it was always the race issue that defined George Wallace. But really, he transcended it. And in 1972, in those primaries, on the day he was shot, May 15, 1972, in Laurel, Maryland, he was a million popular votes ahead of the other candidates in the Democratic primaries and several hundred delegates ahead. And carried every county in the state of Florida and every county in the state of Michigan. So
wow.
He had truly transcended the issue of race, and he was a national figure, and he was stopped really the only way he could have been stopped. And I've written extensively about that in the book. There's so much more to his shooting than people will ever really know. And yes, the sovereignty of the states, the sense that we should determine our own destiny, and that battle's raging today.
Keith?
Well, exactly right. When you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight.
He's saying that George Wallace was on a fast track to perhaps become President Wallace in 1972.
Oh,
he made mention of the fact that he was leading in delegate count and in the popular vote.
Wasn't it remarkable we had so many assassinations back in the 60s? The two Kennedys, George Wallace in the early 70s. See, there and Martin Luther King, there is something about, you know, there's a control mechanism that did not like people that varied from the gospel according to the establishment, the so-called deep state today, but that we had a deep state back then too. That's what we need to understand. There is not an instinctive revulsion to segregation. That was a learned behavior. That's what was hammered into the heads of young school children ever since the 60s, and they've done a wonderful job of making unreality the new reality.
One more comment on whether or not George Wallace could have become president from his son on this program.
There is a very real chance, and not just a possibility, but a very real probability that your father would have been president of the United States in 1972. And you write about this in the book. And what was it like? I mean, at that point in 72, when that happened,
we knew something was going to happen, James. The momentum, Big Mo, as they call it, big momentum was on our side. You could feel it. You knew there was no way he was going to be stopped going to Miami. He'd have the delegates. He was the only conservative running for president that year. And I think,
Keith?
That's right. You know, the other phony conservatives, look, Richard Nixon, come on. Richard Nixon was the guy that made affirmative action the enforcement policy of the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, of the, you know, that was part of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, the enforcement thing. So, you know, obviously, Richard Nixon was not a conservative. The real conservative, the real cultural conservative, the only one on the ballot in 72 was George Wallace.
Well, I got to say this. We don't have time to get into another clip. There's three more I want to play in the next segment. We're going to talk about the movie that was made about George Wallace. It's entitled, appropriately enough, George Wallace. It was made by TNT. It was a TNT made-for-TV movie. TNT used to make movies like that about George Wallace. Gary Sinise played George Wallace in the film. We've interviewed Gary Sinise on this program. Great actor. I mean, Lieutenant Dan. I mean, he was on, I don't want to get him in trouble, he was on exclusively to promote his foundation about raising, you know, money to help wounded warriors.
About as conservative as anyone from Hollywood can be.
Well, no, I mean, survive. He was on, he was doing a benefit in Memphis, not for us, but he was doing local Memphis media. We were able to get him. But anyway, movie about George Wallace. We'll talk about that with his son, revisiting this interview from 10 years ago. Thanks to Kanye West, who put it in my mind, mentioning Rosa Parks.
Kanye,
so we'll be right back.
Kanye
we'll
is a bell ringer.
Right back.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you're enjoying this revisitation of our interview with George Wallace Jr. in light of this era being brought back.
Drew Lackey.
Drew Lackey. Well, we didn't go back to the clips with the interview from Drew Lackey because I think we have replayed that interview since the first time we did it live a couple of times over the years, and we even sent it out as a CD incentive gift for a fundraising drive a couple of years ago, but never have we replayed any of this particular interview.
See,
which
there is another version to this story of the civil rights movement, and you won't hear it anywhere except here on
Well, you'll never hear this right here. So we were talking about the fact that, hey, there was a chance that George Wallace would have become President Wallace in 1972. His positions, yes, including segregation and everything he stood for in the 60s, were popular enough to carry him at least to the Democratic nomination. At least the Democratic nomination. Then he got shot. Now, here's something you're going to hear nowhere else but the political cesspool. Let's go back to the son of George Wallace, George Wallace Jr.
Right. A couple of letters in our family archives years ago that were not intended for the public domain, where my father had written Arthur Brimmer, the man who shot him, left him paralyzed and in pain until the day he died. And he told Arthur Brimmer that he loved him. And he said, Arthur, I've forgiven you, and if you'll ask our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ into your heart, you and I'll be together in heaven.
You ever heard that anywhere else but this radio program, Keith?
No, not at all.
What do you think about this? Something that gave me chills.
They don't want to have anything that would portray George Wallace in a human or positive light. See, you get a totally one-sided demonization. It's not even a characterization.
Of him and us. Of him and us and anybody who thinks sensibly about things.
Anyone that will dare to break the taboos that they have set artificially on our discourse.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're enjoying this, and I hope that you are, remember that we are in the midst of our fourth quarter most important Christmas fundraising drive. But listen, you got to have, I hope you'll agree, you got to have voices like this on the radio. We need your support. We truly need it before the end of the month to keep this thing going. 18 years, next year will be 19. Let's keep it going so we can have more interviews like this and the kind of talk radio you're not going to hear anywhere else. Now, I mentioned the movie Ted Turner produced. They had movies like this that Turner would produce back in the 90s, including a movie called The Hunley, which is a very pro-Southern depiction of the Hunley's story. It featured...
Hunley, of course, was a submarine that...
The Confederate submarine.
The first operative submarine that sank an enemy ship in battle.
That's right. And Amand Asante played Lieutenant Dixon, who was the captain of the Hunley, and Donald Sutherland played P.G.T. Beauregard in the movie. Good movie. I've got that one. I've also got this movie. It's called George Wallace. Gary Sinise played Governor Wallace, and Mayor Winningham played Lurleen Wallace, and Angelina Jolie played his second wife, Cornelia Wallace. And let's listen to my question of George Wallace Jr. about the movie.
I was talking with our featured guest about the movie made about his dad's life, which I have and which I remember watching almost for inspiration in advance of my own campaign for the Tennessee State House of Representatives in 2002. This movie came out in 97. That didn't work out for me, but I did get into radio, so all's well that ends well. The movie, though, Gary Sinise won an Emmy for the performance for his portrayal of your father, and Gary Sinise, one of the all-time great actors. And he won the Emmy on the very night that your father passed away.
He did. My understanding is that he got the news backstage and actually walked out on stage and just made the announcement that Governor Wallace had passed away. And I heard Gary on an interview in Florida. My wife was down in Bradenton, Palmetto, Sarasota area, and I was down there, and he made mention that it was the most intriguing part that he'd ever played in his career, and that was a source of great pride to me, but it was produced.
All right, see, that's interesting to me. So here's Gary Sinise, a Hollywood A-lister, saying that of all the movies he's been in, I mean, he was in Forrest Gump. He's been in so many movies. I mean, he is an A-lister. He said the most interesting character or whatever. What was the word he used, the adjective he used just then, that he's ever played was George Wallace. Most intriguing that he's ever played was George Wallace. Now, when you have these movies that are made now from that era, the actors who play the Southerners, I would never even talk to them. I had to, de-louse after playing that role. But this is an A-lister, Gary Sinise, a conservative by Hollywood standards, certainly, saying the most intriguing character he ever played in all of the movies he's been in was George Wallace. I thought that was very interesting.
Well, of course, we've got a very slanted viewpoint on the position of people like George Wallace and defenders of the old order in the South, back in the Civil Rights Movement. They're all supposed to be villains, and all of the people opposed to us were supposed to be heroes. And, that's one of the incredible things about the Civil Rights Movement. During the Civil Rights Movement, it was the first time that the law enforcement, the police, were successfully portrayed to the American public as villains and the lawbreakers. The civil rights demonstrators were presented as heroes.
Here's one more thing about the movie. The movie came out the year Governor Wallace died, and I asked his son if the governor got to see it.
Did Gary Sinise nail your father's mannerisms? Was he the Wallace of all the... And, of course, Sinise, a Hollywood A-lister, to say the least, and you look at his career and his portfolio.
Yeah.
Did he sum it up, and did you have any interaction with him or the cast during production?
I did not. I talked to Mayor Winningham, the actress who portrayed my my mother, and they had an opening in Washington that I could not make because of a prior engagement, but some friends of mine were there, and I received a note from Gary Sinise that pleased he was to portray my father. But it was an interesting movie, and my father did see it, yes.
I thought that was just very cool that he was able to see that movie just right before he passed away. Now, there's one more thing that I want to play from this interview with George Wallace Jr., and it's him talking about the people of the South. This was the last question I asked him in this interview, which you can listen to in its entirety in our broadcast archives.
No, and I also have written extensively about the people of the South. I've always resented how the people of the South, even today, are portrayed by many on the left, because there's an agenda at work, James. If they can portray Southerners in such a way as slow and backward and all that, and then you correlate that with the fact that we're generally conservative, then we must be flawed.
Right.
Well, we're not flawed. I'm convinced that the people of the South and the spirit of the people of the South is going to save the country. I really believe that.
How about that?
Well, he's exactly right. The Civil Rights Movement was their first step forward in the leftist takeover of America's culture. And that's not by accident, because they knew that segregation was legal segregation, legally enforced segregation, was specific to the South. And this was a way to separate the white community, the North, from the South. That's the only way they could win. And then later on, in the early 70s, when you had busing, when you went from desegregation to aggressive integration, people up north in places like Boston said, uh-oh, we've been sold a bill of goods. This thing, you know, we should have made common cause with the Southerners before, but now it's too late. That's exactly how they intended it to work out.
I want to say something about this book. People asked, would I recommend this book? And I would. It is very interesting. But it does paint the full picture, and I want to be very fair to George Wallace Jr., because during the full and complete interview, we didn't play the whole thing, but he does make mention of the fact of the different phases of his father's life. The Wallace that we know and love for his inauguration speech and the schoolhouse door stand, that was the most memorable phase of his life. Before that, Wallace was originally a racial moderate in the make and mold of the Big Jim Folsom. He then became a staunch segregationist, and George Wallace Jr. says he really did believe in it. Now, finally, though, he evolved into, after the shooting and after his injury, he evolved into a reconciliationist. He apologized for some of the stands that he took in the 60s after the tide turned. Still a larger-than-life character, worthy of our admiration, someone driven by ambition. And that's okay. I'm a pragmatist. As I've always said, I understand that politicians and captains of industry will fall in line with our way of thinking whenever the time comes that we can exert more leverage than our enemies. And that was the case in George Wallace's life. And I'd rather have true believers, but I will take a win however it comes. I do think he was a man who is certainly worthy of our admiration. And we go back to this. This is what he is most remembered for. Probably this 1 minute of his life is what he is most remembered for. Here is George Wallace himself.
Today, I have stood where once Jefferson Davis stood and took an oath to my people. It is very appropriate that from this cradle of the Confederacy, this very heart of the great Anglo-Saxon Southland, that today we sound the drum for freedom, as have our generation of forebears before us done time and again down through history. Let us rise to the call of freedom-loving blood that is in us and send our answer to the tyranny that clanks its chains upon the South. In the name of the greatest people that have ever trod this earth, I draw the line in the dust and toss the gauntlet before the feet of tyranny, and I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever.
And you know who wrote that speech?
Asa Carter.
Asa Carter, the author of The Outlaw Josey Wales. And
don't say anything else, because I don't want you to say who he's related to, who's a fan of this, you know, family listens to this program. But I'll say this, that, you know, he did believe that, and he was always near a Confederate flag, that he would want to make peace at the end of his days. For whatever reason, I will give him the grace.
Look, I lived in that era. The people in the white community that supported segregation did not hate blacks. quite frankly, black Southerners and white Southerners got along famously. The only time we had any problems were when a third-party agent provocateur from outside the area came in and stirred up trouble. In the first Reconstruction, it was Yankee abolitionists. In the second Reconstruction, it was Jewish freedom riders.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed that revisitation with a very classic interview that I think some of our newer listeners, and that by new I mean if you've started tuning in the last decade, you'd have never heard before. It's just part of what we do here. Please support our work. Our Christmas fundraising drive is underway. Find out more at thepoliticalcesspool.org. God bless you. Governor Wallace and your entire family. We'll be back with the second hour. Next, we're going to talk about self-segregation in light of a shooting that just happened at a Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurant. What's going on? We'll tell you next.